the type of business that you have and the type of industry that you're in will inform the type of tax professional that you need, and the size of business that you have will also inform the type of tax professional that you need to answer your questions, handle the paperwork, and make sure that you're following all the rules so that if you ever do get audited, you don't get in a bunch of trouble. Welcome back to the Making Money Podcast, where we talk about how to make more money, keep more of what you make, and make your money work harder for you. I am your co-host, Benjamin Foss, and before we get rolling, I have to say this is not financial advice. Sitting across from me, as always, is the wonderful entrepreneur, business owner, tax expert, good friend, Paul Ng. Paul, how are you today, my friend?
I am doing well. Thank you, Ben.
Excellent. Today, we are going to talk about the very exciting, sexy topic of tax write-offs. Because it's tax season. We're into January now, and many of you are going to be getting into the process of preparing your tax returns here soon. And I don't know about you, dear listener, but for me, when I start thinking about that, it makes me think, what strategies could I employ this year so that my tax bill is smaller next year than it is this year? And so with these sorts of topics sort of on the front of many people's minds, we want to talk about write-offs and specifically what they are, what they are not, and strategies that you can employ depending on your situation to minimize your tax burden. That has to deal with the intro where we talk about keeping more of what you make, right? Minimizing how much you're giving to Uncle Sam and playing this game that the government has come up with all of its many, many complicated rules to the best of your ability. So, Paul, get us started. Talk about, like, what is a write-off anyway? Because sometimes when I go online on social media and I see these random people who think they are experts talk about write-offs, they talk about, oh, I bought this G-Wagon and it's a write-off. They seem to almost imply as if the write-off makes it free or nearly free. Is that the case?
There are so many misconceptions, Ben. Let me just tell you. Taxes and deductions are a combination of a reduction of what the actual taxable amount is. And I know that sounds a little confusing, but I'll give you an example. So let's just say your business makes $100,000 for 2024. That's your starting point of your income. So that's what came in. That's what being reported. That's in the bank account. It's verifiable. The next step is for your practitioner or your accountant to start reducing that $100,000. So you're not looking at going, oh my gosh, I have to pay taxes on $100,000. No, no, no. Let's take a look at the picture and see what we'll do with it. And one of the greatest things that can happen is utilizing the deductions to reduce your income. A, what is a deduction? That is a line item on a tax return that reduces what the taxable amount is. It is also an item in your tax return that can be depreciated, which means the dollar amount is taken over time instead of all at one time. An example would be a remodel of an office. Say you spent $20,000. Well, you shouldn't take all $20,000 at one fell swoop. You should take it over time, called depreciation. And that can be an average between 5 years, 6 years, or 7 years. And it really is dependent on the value and what was done. So year one, let's just say we're going to take $4,000 out of that $20,000. So we'll take it over 5 years. So we've taken our $100,000 that we made and we reduced it by $4,000. So now we're at $96,000 taxable. The next thing is, Well, I have a cell phone that I use and internet that I use. So those things are called telecommunications. And let's just say that's going to turn out to be $3,000 for the year. So now we've got $3,000 less. So now we've gone from $96,000 to $93,000. And now we've got travel expenses because you're traveling for work. And we're going to claim, let's just say 50% of it, because 50% of it could be for pleasure. So we've got another $10,000, let's just say. So we'll take $5,000 of that. So now we've gone from $93,000 down to $88,000. So you get the picture where we can actually use these deductions and we could start reducing how much you made. Now, that being said, remember, we don't always want to take it down to you owing nothing. That is a great, great idea. In theory, that sounds absolutely beautiful. But the caveat is when you make nothing, that means you don't pay into Social Security and Medicare, which some of you don't care about, and some of you do. But it also means that you don't have an income to qualify for a purchase of a home, perhaps, or a purchase of a vehicle, perhaps, or anything that requires a tax return verification of what income you have made after your deductions as a self-employed person. Now, those of you who work in the work world as a W-2 wage earn employee working for somebody else, you're thinking, well, how can I get a piece of that action? Unfortunately, there isn't much out there. And that's on another conversation we can have one-on-one with you or with you and your tax professional, because each person's situation is very different. Now, if you own a home and you have rentals, that's a little more exciting and sexy on top of these self-employed deductions that you may or may not have. So let's have a brief conversation about a rental that you own, and you also have your self-employment job that you're consulting for somebody. What does that look like? Well, we already know some of the deductions you can take for this consulting business that we just spoke about. But let's talk about you now also have a rental. And what is a deduction for that rental? The most common ones are the mortgage interest, your property taxes, and your property insurance. Those are the most common that we think about because that's what we're paying in our mortgage normally. But there's a great deal of expenses that we don't commonly think about. And those could be the depreciation of that property over 27 and a half years. So that's huge. Another one is HOA, if there is any. Another one is your repairs or your maintenance to the property. Not the full remodel, but things like your electrical had to be repaired, or you had to get a lawn mowing service or snow removal or those things, you know, things that are a couple hundred dollars here and there versus a $20,000 remodel. The direct expenses for those couple hundred bucks absolutely will be deduct. The bigger expenses of the $20,000 remodel or the bigger expenses of a purchase of new washer and dryers and appliances and such, we would take that over time. And
I want to quickly jump in here. Why is it that we're taking that $20,000 remodel over 5 or 10 years and not just taking it all in 1 year?
Certain things can and can't be. So I would advise to go onto the IRS.gov website to look at some of those rules, as there are too many to discuss right now. But the rule of thumb is any expenses that you have over $1,000 normally would be depreciated over time. Now, that being said, There are things called a Section 179 one-time deduction where you can take that in one fell swoop versus overtime. Some of those things would be, as I would say, carpeting, some furniture. Those would be the probably most common things versus I had the whole basement remodeled and it was for the rental property. Well, the IRS kind of frowns upon taking that all at one fell swoop. Your tax practitioner or professional would advise you correctly on what can and cannot be taken all at one time. But the best way to look at it is if it's over $1,000, assume that it would be over time.
Okay, that sounds great. I want to rewind a little bit to where you're talking about reducing that 100,000 to 96 and then 93. So when we're thinking, and Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, when we're thinking about the value of a write-off, this is kind of the way that I've thought about it myself. If I have a $1,000 expense for my business, let's say over the course of the year, there's $1,000 in something that's a write-off. If my tax rate was 25%, then writing off that $1,000 is worth about $250.
Roughly.
Yes. Now, the other thing that's kind of hidden in this is you can, between the deductions and then, you know, standard deduction and everything else that you're doing, you actually can lower your tax bracket potentially so that your tax rate is lower. So not only are you reducing the amount of income that's being taxed, but you're reducing the rate at which it is taxed.
Absolutely 100% correct.
Which is really powerful. I mean, that becomes a compounding effect to where it's, you know, especially if you're right on that line there of those tax brackets where it maybe changes 3%, 4%, 5%, maybe more. That can be a massive amount of savings depending on your income level. But you do have to kind of balance that with, like you said, if you're thinking, I want to buy a home in the next couple of years, which we actually just talked about whether you should rent or buy in 2025. If you have not listened to that, it's episode number 19 from just a couple of weeks ago. If you're thinking, I want to do that, then you may have to take a higher amount of income that's taxable and pay a higher tax burden in order to qualify. Because if you are self-employed, if you're a business owner and your business is not large enough to where you could be considered separate enough from it to get a salary, and that, you know, that's a whole nother thing. But if you're a small business owner, solopreneur, self-employed, whatever the case may be, your income is going to be calculated based off AGI, adjusted gross income. And so then all those extra write-offs that you're taking are going to count against your ability to qualify for something, unfortunately. But you may have to do that for the short-term strategy of buying a home and then calculate the cost or calculate the benefits over time of like, oh, but if I own a home, then maybe I'll get to enjoy appreciation and then more write-offs in the future and then more space and all these other variables that you have to consider.
Absolutely. It's a catch-22 when you're talking about, I'm going to do my taxes and I don't want to pay much, and then comes time to utilize those taxes for a purchase of a home. What have I done? That's the big question mark. It's this elephant in the room that you don't want to deal with, literally, right? Because tax time's here and I don't want to see myself with this amount of debt. But then it puts you in the position of, if I don't report this income and pay this debt, then I don't qualify for something. So you either pay nothing and then not be able to afford something, or you have to pay something or a lot of something to be able to afford something. So it
comes down to, like, what are your goals?
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you want to achieve this year, 2 or 3 years from now? Because if your goals change, you can always change how you're reporting from year to year. But it's going to take a year or two, depending on what you're trying to do, in order to show that history. Now, one of the benefits, and we may go into more depth of this later on, a future episode, is if you decide to go with a non-QM loan for a house, a non-qualifying, also referred to as a bank statement loan, then you can go off actual bank statement income, which is pre-tax, it's pre-write-off, and you can qualify for a mortgage that way. But when it comes to like buying a vehicle or some other potential expenses, that could be a little bit more tricky.
It is absolutely tricky.
Yeah. So moving on, I want to talk to specifically people who are business owners, because as you said, there's a lot more options and flexibility in the rules with what you can write off and what you can do. So we want to cover some different categories and some things and maybe bring to light some ideas that people have, may have not considered could be a write-off for them depending on their situation. So business vehicle. If I want to have a vehicle that's designated exclusively as a business vehicle, what do I need to do? And then what tax benefits can I get from doing that?
The purpose of using a vehicle in a business is for a deduction, right? But we also know that as a solopreneur, that part of that vehicle is personal use. So we don't consider a single vehicle in a business just business. No auditor is going to look at this and go, so you stay home all the time and you only drive when you need to go to work and do work stuff. Well, grocery store counts, gas station counts, you know, the bars count, the restaurants count, all's personal stuff. So to make a vehicle usable as a tax deduction in the business, number one, purchase a vehicle in a business name if you're getting a loan. How is that done? Normally, you go to the dealership, you look at the vehicle, you find the vehicle you're going to purchase, you make sure you have your business tax returns with you because they will use that information from the business tax return, your EIN number and the name to verify it's real, and then get the loan in the business name with you as a personal guarantor. Why? Because they will not allow you to get a loan just in the business. And if it's in both your names, and if you are a solopreneur and you haven't established a separate entity, let's just say, and they look at your return and it's a personal return with your business in it on your Schedule C, then you may have a name and you. So therefore, that will need in the loan paperwork as well as your auto registration. So get a loan in your name and the business name, which they will do automatically. Number two, make sure you get insurance in the business name with you as well. Everything must match. The third thing is you want to get insurance with the business name and you as the driver as well. And then you want to be able to take all those pieces and incorporate that to your business tax return. At that point, it can be up to 75% for the business because 25% has got to be for you to get gas and food and entertainment and personal use. There's no way that that one vehicle is going to be just work. It's just not possible. If you had two vehicles now, then you could designate one strictly for work, which is possible.
Now, if I have the two vehicles, do I still have to go through all the steps of insurance, registration, loan, having the business name on it?
You could have one in your personal name only, and the other one should be in the business name with you as the additional.
Now, does that mean that then I have to go and get commercial insurance?
Absolutely.
Because it's going to be a lot more expensive.
It will, but it's a deduction.
It is a deduction.
Yeah.
But you got to think, you know, if the insurance is double the cost, the write-off is worth, you know, depending on your tax bracket, let's say 25%. So, you know, do that math and count the cost. But one of the benefits is if you do have a designated business vehicle, instead of being able to only write off mileage one way, you could write off all the mileage because that mileage is supposed to be for business purposes only.
Correct.
Great. So if I have an existing vehicle that was mixed business personal, and then I'm wanting to designate it as purely business, do you know, like, can I just go to my existing loan and say, hey, I want to add the business's name to it? Or do you have to refi it? Or
it would have to be refinanced. It
has to be refied. Okay. Absolutely. So there's a process involved.
Absolutely.
With doing that. Great. But what write-off benefits? I mean, I get to write off more mileage. What other write-off benefits do I get with that vehicle?
So you would get, if it's 100% for the business, let's use that route first, then you can take mileage deduction or you can take the direct expenses. You can't do both. That would be your gas, the repairs, the maintenance, auto registration. Interest payments on the car are the only deductions on that payment that can be used. So when you're talking about a payment of $500, maybe $200 of it is interest. I don't know. Whatever that interest is, that would be the deduction for the payment. Most people get very confused and think they can take the whole payment. And that's not possible. Now, if you get a lease, that's a total different animal versus a purchase. A lease, if it's in the business name and we can prove that it's for business purposes, once again, you would have to have a separate vehicle for personal use, or we would take 75% of that lease as well. And the lease is a 100% deduction of the amount of usage, let's just say.
So is there any depreciation that's a write-off with a vehicle like it is with a home?
If it's purchased, absolutely. Okay. And there are rules on that. It could be over 5 years if it's under 6,000 pounds, gross motor vehicle weight. Or if it is over and it is in the business name, et cetera, then we get around 30,000 for year one and then the rest depreciated over time.
That's pretty substantial.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But you're also spending a lot of money for that vehicle.
Yeah, most vehicles over 6,000 pounds are going to be trucks. You know, and a lot of these pickup trucks cost $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, depending on what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be pretty expensive for sure. But one clarifying question I wanted to ask, if I'm taking the mileage deduction, do you get to also write off the cost of insurance and tires, that sort of thing? Or is it only the interest?
So you either get mileage itself, or you get interest and the actual direct expenses. If A, the vehicle is in the business name and you as well, and you have two vehicles, then 100% of that one vehicle is. If not, it's a percentage, which is up to 75.
So depending on the vehicle, you may be better off just taking the mileage because it's what, like 57 cents a mile now?
Oh, it changes every year.
It changes every year. So yes. Look at the IRS website for the latest info on that. But some vehicles that are more economical, you may be better off taking the mileage. Some vehicles, which are, you know, if you have a work truck that has a lot of maintenance, a lot of fuel cost, if insurance costs are particularly high and all that, the payment's high, then, or, you know, with the interest, I should say, then you may be better off not taking the mileage and going direct expense, but that's going to be up to your individual situation.
Absolutely. And we always want to weigh out the pros and cons. Some people love to lease a vehicle because they're non-committal. That's the whole purpose of that. Another reason is people like to trade their cars in all the time, and they, well, sometimes they like a nicer car. Sometimes they just want a different car. I don't know. It's personal preference at that point. But really, when you're looking at deductions, always look at it as, is it a business purpose? Not because you're just trying to reduce your income. It's very, very important to understand that we don't deduct things just because you have to deduct it for the purpose. Always refer to irs.gov and look up deductions in there versus asking Google and seeing that somebody used it. And that is not the way to do that. There are rules and regulations and statutes both the IRS and the state have placed in place for the purpose and the usage So I always advise, go to the horse's mouth. Don't do assumptions.
Absolutely. If I have a home office, we talked about this a little bit. Can I rent a portion of my house to my business? And if so, how do I determine how much I can charge my business for that space?
You can do that. I always advise people, think long and hard before you do this. A, if you want to do it 100% correctly, you're going to put it on the tax return as a rental, that portion of it. Then you can depreciate that portion of it and take another deduction from there. And also take a portion of what the utilities are for that portion. And you would also look at what you would have remodeled or improved in that portion. So yes, it is a great usage for a deduction, but you have to look at it as, okay, I've got to claim the income and I may zero out. Is that really the purpose, is to get a deduction and zero out on that piece? If so, then that's great. The other portion that you need to think about is when you sell that home, or if you sell that home, those deductions that you took from that home office are recaptured, meaning that they will be added back in as income to you. So be very careful about that.
Does that refer to just the depreciation, or does that refer to the portions of the utilities and remodel as well?
The depreciation.
Okay. So if you elect to not take the depreciation for that portion, then you don't have to worry about the recapture.
Yes.
Okay. And then it sounded like part of what you said there was, if I'm taking rental income, I'm paying taxes on that, which means the write-off on the business side basically may equal out, and you're kind of doing a lot of work for nothing, essentially.
Well,
or limited financial gain?
Well, no, because the income from the rental may zero out on that side, yes. But the deduction on where you're looking at is probably going to be, if you have an S-corp, I should say, or a partnership. Let's go there first, because that rent is a deduction on that part. So it'll reduce your taxable income from the business side. If you zero out on the rental side, on your personal side from that, then that's great, because now you don't have to worry about that rental income, and we reduced it on the business side. So therefore, it is a win.
So in general, is my, let's say I have an S-corp, is my S-corp generally being taxed at a lower rate than my personal income, or like what? How does that compare?
Yes, it is. It's taxed at a flat rate. Now, that being said, only part of that passes through at a flat rate. There is the portion where you have to report your self-employment income from that side. And that's something that you definitely need to talk to your preparer or professional about, because it's not necessarily wages that you paid to yourself. It could be an officer compensation rolled into the self-employment side and passing through into the personal return, and therefore being taxed with self-employment. I know that sounds a little convoluted, but that is definitely something to talk about, because that is an income conversation that we should save for another podcast so we can keep you entertained.
Yeah, it's we don't want to get too far down these rabbit holes. We're just trying to overview a few different topics and categories for the purposes of this. Now, in terms of, let's say I've decided I do want to go ahead and rent out that office space to my business, what do I need to do to, is there anything I need to do on a paperwork side to set that up? Do I need to draw up a lease? And then how do I determine how much to charge my business?
Well, that's a good question. I would always tell someone that you would do a literal flat $1 a square foot. I think that's a very fair number to use, and not doing it as a, here I'm going to jack it up to $3,000 because that's what market rent is for an office space. You're working out of the home. And 1,000 square feet is a pretty average size basement, I would say, for a full basement, I should say. And so $1,000 a month to yourself is really a fair number.
Okay, so you're going to base on dollar per square foot, not necessarily market rent because it's, you know, part of a home and all of that. If we have a garage space that's designated to a business vehicle, could that be considered part of the benefit of the rented office space, or is that getting like too convoluted?
No, I mean, you could do that for sure if you're going to claim that as a rentable space to yourself. Absolutely. And what does that look like? I don't know what a garage rents for, but I would say, you know, it's probably going to only be about 100 square feet that you're using, maybe. I don't know.
Usually, like, one garage space is somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 by 20. Okay, so 200
square feet.
Yeah. And so, you know, the value of a garage varies by market because, like, out here in Colorado where it snows and we're also, like, the hail capital of the world or pretty close to it, garage space is more valuable than it is in a place like California where the weather's nice all the time.
Yes, very true.
So it'll vary depending on market. And one idea that I had, and you can tell me if you disagree with this, is look at apartments and what they charge for detached garage spaces. And that gives you a pretty good idea of what they think the market rent or market value of that garage space would be. Usually it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 to $150 a month, but it varies from market to market.
I think realistically, a dollar a square foot, no matter if it's the garage or the basement or the upstairs office, whatever that looks like, I think it's a fair number.
Hey everyone, quick break from the show. If you found this information useful, if you think the show is beneficial and helpful, take a moment, like, subscribe, rate the podcast, and pick one or two people from your contacts that you think would benefit from this free information and the knowledge that we're giving you. Send them the link. Let them know that you found the show helpful. It's the only way we're going to grow. We're not paying for ads. We're not doing sponsorships or selling products. We're just here to help you make more money. Thank you so much for listening, and with that, back to the show. One thing that you can also do if you have an S corp or your own business is you can have certain perks or benefits that go to your to employee or the owner of the business. What sorts of perks can we have the business offer, and then how much of that gets to be a write-off for the business?
Well, that is a great question, Ben. So if you're looking at, let's go dollar for dollar what we're talking about. And so if we're talking about the office space, we'll start there first because we were just talking about that. So in office space, we're going to say dollar for dollar. Same concept here. I'm going to say $1,000 because it's easy in my head to think about. And we started with this 1,000 square foot basement as an office. The reduction there from your income is dollar for dollar. Now we have a garage, $200, let's just say for 200 square foot, dollar for dollar. So now we're at $1,200. We've got office expenses, office supplies, anything of those natures are always going to be 100% because they're fully used. Advertising is a full use for the business. Clearly, if you've got a telephone and that's all you're working with, most auditors will just give you 100% for the cell phone because they know you're not going to get a separate phone line just for the business unless you've got a retail store and it requires a phone line or something. So, you know, on average, the reality is every business deduction except your travel and except your vehicle, whether it's a loan or whether it's a lease, will depend on if it's that's your only vehicle. And also depreciation of items, as we spoke before. Those are your questionable, can I use 100% or not? But if you're going to be using direct expenses for a business, clearly they would be 100%.
What about like employee perks? Like if I want to say, okay, my business is offering me life insurance, My business is offering healthcare. My business is offering an annual ski pass as like an employee perk or benefit. What about things that are kind of those kind of categories?
So employee benefits is a great area to have a great conversation about, because really what is a benefit is the gym membership one, because everyone always asks about the gym membership. Well, I go to the gym and I always look at it as, okay, is it because it's a benefit for everyone in the company, or is it just a benefit for you? Normally a gym membership for one is an individual of a sole proprietor or an S corp or a C corp. A gym membership does not fly. Life insurance for one does not fly. But the one benefit that does 100% of the time is your health benefits and your health expenses 100% of the time. Now, sometimes people look at it and go, well, I have a share plan. It's not a qualified plan. Absolutely. It's a health benefit. So that is definitely an employee benefit itself. I would always recommend, if you're looking at benefits for a deduction, make sure they're qualifiable. A 401k, a SEP, a SARSEP, benefits for health, obviously. Even if you've got dental and vision, add that in, because that's part of it. People think health insurance is just health. No, health insurance does cover the vision, and it also does cover the dental portion of it as well. So look at benefits as, okay, is it a qualifiable plan, or is it just a, I get to have some fun and deduct it? So realizing if it's a legitimate or not legitimate is very important.
So it sounds like part of what makes something legitimate or not has to do with how many employees you have and then how many of them are getting that benefit.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Because I do.
There are limits.
Because I know, you know, people who, I mean, my mom works for Fidelity, and I believe at one point in time they were actually offering a gym membership as. But that's a big company with a lot of employees.
Absolutely. So it's not just a gain for you. It's a win for everyone.
So if I have one employee and I'm giving them the same sort of perks that I'm giving myself, then it looks a lot more legitimate.
100%.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's what you got to consider is, you got to think of like through the eyes of an auditor. And if you're having to explain it, it's like, okay, does it actually make sense that this would be a business expense, or does it look like you're just trying to write off personal things?
Absolutely. If you're trying to validate something for a personal gain, that normally does not fly.
Okay. Now, let's say I have two businesses, and let's say my first business, business A, wants to hire business B to do something for business A, like fully legitimate. Like, let's say my first business does consulting, my second business does advertising, and want to hire my advertising firm to help advertise my consulting business. Does the expense of paying the advertising business become a write-off for the consulting business now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, we think that's a great thing because I just reduced my income, but the other one just made the income.
So it's,
and you can't double dip on that same phone bill. So you can't double dip on the same internet bill. So did it really do you a benefit? Questionable.
Right. Now, if my second business is now an LLC, is that income now going to be taxed at a higher rate than it would have if I was in the S corp?
Absolutely would.
Yeah. So then you're actually doing yourself a disservice.
Absolutely.
In a way, because it's now a higher taxable
income. Exactly. Now, if it has other expenses that aren't shared, and a prime example is you had to buy media space and storage space, et cetera, then absolutely that would reduce that income because it's specific for that business.
Maybe my marketing business needed a new camera.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not a justifiable expense for my consulting business, maybe.
Yeah.
But it may be for the other business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's great. Is there a point because we've talked a little bit about LLC versus S-Corp, and in previous episodes we've talked about how S-Corps tend to have better tax benefits. Is there a certain income threshold where the S-Corp becomes beneficial, or is it just always better?
I would say if you're making above $40,000, absolutely should go to an S-Corp. That's usually a good threshold to start playing around with that.
Okay, so below that. Now, is that $40,000 for just that business, or $40,000 for me as an individual?
$40,000 for the business and you, because let's think of the best way to say this in English. So
I'm putting you through the ringer tonight.
You are. I love it. I love it. I just wish this was a more exciting topic. I know a lot of our listeners are like, I get a lot out of this, but a lot of listeners are thinking, oh, taxes are so boring. But they're not. I mean, for us.
But saving money's not boring.
No, saving money's exciting. But really now, the premise behind what we're trying to do here is, do we want to be a single member LLC, or do we want to be something that is going to save us in taxes? Because everyone understands the LLC primarily because you're seeing it on the internet and because everyone talks about you should be an LLC, right? But there's so many other things in the formation of your business and how it can affect it. So we're talking about the S Corp. And as a $40,000 dollar amount, I would say absolutely, if a business made $40,000 as an LLC, you're probably going to pay the right amount of taxes, and it should. And it doesn't really benefit you all that much unless you have reduced that $40,000 to $12,000 or $14,000, something so minor that you're only owing a couple of hundred bucks. But when you go to the S Corp, now we can be at $40,000 and then designate part of that in a self-employment income and pay into the Medicare and Social Security tax of self-employment. Or we can look at it and go, okay, now I can put myself on a W-2 and skip that. And sometimes people think that putting yourself on a W-2 is absolutely necessary. It really isn't. The IRS wants to just see you pay that self-employment tax. They don't necessarily need to see a W-2. And that means they want to see you pay that Medicare and Social Security. Now, I always advise my clients, if you're above $40,000, switch over to the S Corp. It makes better sense. You're paying more to do two separate tax returns, but isn't it something you want to do to save money versus penny pinching the wrong way? That's my suggestion.
Pay less in tax filing, but pay more in actual taxes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, what's the point?
Absolutely.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, we've been talking a little bit about, or a lot about business income and business expenses. Until very recently, I was very focused personally on showing a lot of income so that I could purchase a home. Now, gears have kind of switched, and I'm having the business actually pay directly for its own expenses, such as the business vehicle and MLS subscriptions and charging the vehicle and all that sort of thing. What benefits, because I could, there's some of the things that I could write off either way. Like my MLS subscription for me as an appraiser is a write-off whether I put it on a personal credit card or a business credit card. So what benefits do I have if I have an S-Corp? What benefits do I have in paying, having the business pay for these things directly versus just keeping it on personal cards and getting miles and reward points or whatever and then writing it off? Does it matter?
It doesn't. The IRS likes to see clean. So if you're the only person in the business, that's fine. Now remember, you have to keep track of all these expenses, not just by a credit card bill, but the IRS wants to actually see the receipt, whether it's an email receipt, whether it's a printed receipt, they need to see the receipt. It's silly to just get it for the personal miles on a credit card. My suggestion is get a business credit card that gets miles and points and such.
Right. So I guess one question, because I know we mentioned before about how the S corp is going to be taxed at most likely at a lower rate than the personal income side. So if we're having the business pay for these expenses directly, and then I'm not taking as much personal income because I don't have to, then like, would that be a benefit of having the business pay directly, or is the tax burden end up being about the same regardless?
There's no 100% answer to that one, because it could be on both sides. It could have less, could have more. It really, really, you have to look at what your taxable income is going to be. So,
and like what your tax bracket is.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't just make a judgment based upon that. You know what I'm saying? You really need to take everything into consideration. So, and unless this is your only income and there is nothing else, and you don't own a home and you don't have any kids and you're not married and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, then, you know, it's a different ball game. If you only have your consulting business and that's all that you have, then we can definitely give you a more clear answer.
What would that answer be for that individual?
Well, let's say the number.
Let's say the business is making $200,000 a year.
Okay, let's say they're making $200,000. So they're paid to themselves. The IRS likes to see around 50% or more. So let's just say they netted $200,000 after all this, right? So let's just give them a self-employment pay of $50,100. And then let's just go $49,900 for the business. So $49,900 gets taxed at the flat passing through. And then the $50,000 goes over to the self-employment side, which we pay self-employment tax. Without any kids and without a home and without et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's just that. Then we can just calculate that at somewhere around 23%.
And what would be the S corp portion, like the corporate tax for that?
$49,000. I'm going to say it's going to be somewhere around probably like $4,500-ish, $5,000-ish. It's between.
Well, like the rate, is it 21% or?
It's I can't remember what it is offhand, but
okay,
it's definitely a lot less because you have to take your standard deduction on top of that.
Right.
So there's a few more pieces on top of this than just a dollar amount. These are just rough estimates. So I mean, you could say 21%, obviously, but then we also look at then we have standard deduction. Now that just reduced that by 13,000, 14,000, whatever it is. So now we have to look at it as, now I have to look at it as I've just lowered my tax bracket a little bit.
Right.
So it's, I can never just say an exact answer. It's a fluctuating answer.
Yeah. This is why you hire a tax professional, ladies and gentlemen, because this stuff is so complicated. There's so many factors, and it's one of those things where like you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
And so you don't know what you're missing.
Exactly.
I want to tackle one more topic, and this is a little bit of review from a couple weeks ago, but I think it's just important to add into here. So a couple weeks ago when we talked about whether you should rent or buy a home, one of the topics we covered was there's sort of a bucket of deductions that does not add on to the standard deduction, whether you're single or married filing jointly, but could potentially replace it. And we talked about how for your personal home, your taxes, insurance, and interest, and HOA all fall into that category, potentially replacing it. If I am renting out a room either to an individual to live in or basement to my business, do those deductions, the depreciation and all that, does that fall into that same bucket of potentially replacing the standard deduction, or is that separate?
So it's separate. So it's on top of.
Okay.
So when a good example is, let's just say your mortgage, interest, and property taxes only amount to $9,000. And then we add in part of your insurance, and we part of certain things that we'll just take because it's a percentage now because you've rented off your home to yourself. So your standard deduction may not meet the deduction of the actual usage. So therefore, I take that back. The standard deduction would be used versus doing the itemized deduction for Schedule A. So, and that means that, okay, that's higher. That's good. But your rental has all those deductions that we're going to use. So it's going to take the mortgage piece of the interest and the mortgage piece of the insurance and the mortgage piece of the HOA. So, you know, those will become deductions. So instead of using the standard on that side, we're actually going to take the itemized on this side for the portions that was used.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, if I'm in a situation where typically the standard deduction would be more favorable to me, but now let's say I'm renting out a spare bedroom to someone, I get to tap into a small portion of those deductions that I am otherwise foregoing?
Potentially.
Okay.
Because everything's based upon the number. If it's higher than standard deduction on the personal side, not the rental, or is my itemized higher than my standard? So once again, we have to pick pen to paper. In our case, really, it's a click of a button on a computer. But you really need to put those numbers in before we can even say it's usable or not usable. Most of the time, people think, I'm itemizing. Oh, that's great. Because you're putting into TurboTax, you may not be itemizing because you didn't meet the standard deduction.
Yeah, and you'd be doing yourself a disservice to take the lower of the two deduction amounts. Now, what other sorts of things fall into sort of that bucket of things that may or may not add up to replacing the standard deduction? I believe charitable giving is one of those.
It's a percentage of your adjusted gross income, 60%, if you're going to use the cap. Now, that being said, not everything's dollar for dollar again as well. So you really need to look at, is there a value to all of this? And if there isn't, then why am I itemizing? Because we haven't met that qualified number. Now, once again, these are all potentials. So without actually putting your information in, we can hypothetically guess all we want. We think that our mortgage is a useful dollar amount because we feel that we're paying $3,000 a month and we're getting all $3,000. Not necessarily.
Right, because you're not getting to write off the interest, right? Or, I mean, you're not getting to write off the principal is what I meant to say.
And if you've had your home for 15, 20 years, you may not have that much in interest to deduct because you're now paying more into the principal. After the first 10 years, you're paying more into principal.
Or if you're one of those lucky SOBs that got like a 2.9% interest rate, which, hey, if you got that, you're better, like more power to you, man.
Absolutely.
Never sell that house ever.
Absolutely.
That's free money right there. Awesome. Well, thank you, Paul, for letting me rapid fire drill you here with a million tax questions at the end of a long day.
I love it. It's a good thing I didn't have to say I have to get back to you on that. That's the worst thing I feel when someone asks me a question and it's out of my realm. But, you know, there are many times us tax professionals out there don't have the exact answer, primarily and because it's not in our scope. You know, we have a specialty and sometimes our specialty is this industry or that industry. And sometimes we just don't have the answer because we've been out of the niche of other types of businesses.
Well, that's a helpful thing to think about for you as a listener. If you have the type of business that you have and the type of industry that you're in will inform the type of tax professional that you need. And the size of business that you have will also inform the type of tax professional that you need to answer your questions, handle the paperwork, and make sure that you're following all the rules so that if you ever do get audited, you don't get in a bunch of trouble.
Absolutely. Always go to the horse's mouth and always go to irs.gov.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We hope this was educational and informative for you. Not the most exciting topic, but we hope you learned something. We encourage you and ask you, like, subscribe, share the show. Let us know what you think about it, and we will see you in the next one.